Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. With just days to go before Election Day, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are canvassing battleground states in the Southwest today. Vice President Kamala Harris in Arizona and Nevada. Former President Trump also in Nevada and New Mexico. High-profile Democrats are also getting out the vote for Harris. Former President Clinton held an event in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and warned of another Trump term.
The country cannot afford to take a chance on someone who thinks that America should be judged by whether the president of North Korea and Vladimir Putin like us.
Consumer spending up 2.1% in September from a year ago, just shy of the Federal Reserve Board's target rate, the inflation gauge falling to its lowest level since 2021. And the LA Dodgers are celebrating their eighth World Series title, beating the New York Yankees in Game 5 last night. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. If you want to vote early in Wisconsin but still haven't done it yet, your window is rapidly closing. The final day for in-person early voting in most communities is Friday, unless your municipality offers early voting over the weekend. There will be no in-person early voting anywhere in Wisconsin on Monday to give election workers the time they need to prepare for Election Day. For details on when in-person early voting will be offered in your area, you should check with your local clerk. If you can't vote early over the weekend, you'll have to wait for Tuesday. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers is urging residents to sign up for health care coverage when the open enrollment period launches on Friday. In a statement, Governor Evers praised the Affordable Care Act as a game changer for Wisconsin families, which saw over 250,000 residents sign up during the last open enrollment period. Governor Evers has also called for an expansion of Medicaid, claiming it would bring in nearly $2 billion at a crucial time for the health care industry. The open enrollment period will end on January 15th. After collecting nearly 300 submissions and narrowing them down to 10 finalists, it's time for Duluth residents to vote for their favorite in their first-ever snowplow naming contest. Among the 10 finalists are names like Sled Zeppelin, Blizzard Wizard, and Edgar Allan Plow. Residents have until November 4th to vote for their favorite name on the City of Duluth's website, and the winner will be announced on November 11th. The winning name will also be displayed on the snowplow at the Christmas City of the North Parade on November 22nd. A group of Duluth area renters took to City Hall on Wednesday for the unofficial launch of a tenants union. About 100 members attended the event, calling for improved affordability, livability, and availability of housing in the city. Many complained that in addition to an overall lack of housing stock, much of the housing stock that does exist is far too old and in terrible condition. They also complained of mistreatment and a lack of communication from landlords when problems arise. The union seeks community-led solutions for the housing issues. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Badgers with a win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. In college hoops, the Wisconsin men's team with a 78-62 win over UW River Falls last night at the Kohl Center. Guard John Tanjay led the Badgers with 15 points, 2 assists, and was asked if these preseason games are helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something we all kind of expected going into this game, first game of the year. Coaches need a look from everyone. You know, we want to see what guys can do and where we can fit in as a team.
NBA, the Bucks on the road tonight in Memphis. They play the Grizzlies. Milwaukee looking to snap a 3-game losing streak. NFL, the Packers shorthanded at practice as they get ready to play the Lions on Sunday. 7 players, including Jordan Love, unable to go. Running back Josh Jacobs, dealing with a twisted ankle, asked if that's a lot for week 9 of the season.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, that's just the nature of this business, man. You know, you get later in the season, you have a lot more guys take a day or two. That's just this nature of this business.
That's Packers running back Josh Jacobs. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Snow possibly mixed with rain this afternoon, and it could be heavy at times. Don't be shocked if you hear some thunder, and those winds are whipping, gusting up to 30 miles per hour, crashing our temperatures, and snow accumulations could be around 1 to 3 inches. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 33 at our studios.
Quiet down. Here she comes. Surprise! Your accountant just emailed to say your quarterly taxes are way higher than you were expecting.
At Progressive, we know small business owners don't usually like surprises because they cost you money. But a good surprise that could save you money? Getting discounts with a commercial auto quote from Progressive.
Also, your favorite employee is leaving. They're going to pursue their dream of being a veterinarian.
Surprise yourself. See if you can save in as little as 7 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
It's time to get out the truth about Eric Hovde. Hovde made his money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it. How can he relate or make decisions for us? Now he's the CEO of a billion-dollar bank in California and a huge landlord. With people like Eric Hovde, the rich pay less, and we pay the price. I'm not a political person. I'm a mom. I would never vote for a person like Eric Hovde.
Paid for by a Better Wisconsin Together Action, abwt-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, could there be winds of change blowing through the northern part of Wisconsin? We'll talk to Kyle Kilborn running against Tom Tiffany. Join us.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Mattenair on air.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org. And be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.
What's up, y'all? It is the 3 o'clock hour, and so it's time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. My special guest today is Wendy Lee, a sociologist and fellow at the SNF, Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins University. Wendy studies the careers and social networks of public policy professionals, the people who write our laws, and is writing a book about the revolving door between government and lobbyists. Welcome, Wendy. You're also a University of Wisconsin-Madison graduate, so hello to my fellow Badger.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me. I am a proud Badger, and I'm really excited to be here today.
So I wanted to get in, like, how does somebody become a lobbyist? Like, where do these people come from? Frankly, there's a lot of lawyers who are lobbyists. Where does this whole industry emanate from a pure, like, who are the lobbyists? What do they do all day? What does it look like?
Yeah, this is a great question. So I guess I'll just start by saying there's a lot of diversity and variation in what we mean when we've been saying that someone is a lobbyist, right? What I think most people have in their mind when they think about a lobbyist is maybe a guy in a suit with a briefcase knocking on doors in the halls of Congress, or maybe, you know, sitting in a smoky back room somewhere at a bar and trying to, you know, do deals with policy.
The old cigar clouded back room. Yes,
exactly. But what I find is that actually the vast majority of lobbyists do their work out in the open, and their work is being reported on. They're being, you know, covered in newspapers. They're doing, it's, you know, a pretty mundane job, actually, when you get down to it. A lot of people work for lobbying firms, which act like law firms. So people, you know, go to them, say, I need your services. I'll sign a contract. I'm going to be your client. But then a lot of them also represent organizations directly. So a company like Microsoft or Pfizer, for example, has a lobbying office, a government relations office in D.C., that has a staff and they're sort of permanently, you know, based in D.C. You also have organizations that aren't necessarily companies, right? So a labor union, like the one I was a member of at Wisconsin, the American Federation of Teachers, has their own lobbyists, or a professional association, like the American Medical Association that represents doctors. So there's a lot of variation in, you know, who lobbyists are representing and what kind of work they do. And then
just to recap so that people are catching this, you've got lobbyists that work for individual corporations. You've got trade lobbyists. You have lobbyists working for innocuous sounding groups whose purposes are somewhat vague and undefined until you dig in. Am I getting the categories mostly right? And please keep adding to them.
Yeah. And you know, this is a constantly changing landscape. So this is also some of the trouble, but also, you know, I think what makes this research so, so exciting. And so, yeah, you do have groups that are very, you know, forthcoming and say, I'm advocating for oil companies, or I'm advocating for real estate, you know, brokers, right? But then you also have what we might call deep lobbying or shadow lobbying groups. And these are groups with really nice names like the Center for Progress or, you know, Americans for, you know, Innovation and Jobs or whatever. I think I made that one up. I don't know if that's real.
They make them up, so that's totally fine.
But, you know, and then when you dig into it, you start seeing, oh, they have specific corporate sponsors, or, you know, maybe the staff is all coming from one law firm and they all have a very specific point of view. And so you do get those kinds of instances too of, you know, influence maybe being laundered in some way. But for the most part, I find that most lobbyists are actually pretty forthcoming of who they're representing and what perspective they're coming from.
So are lobbyists the vehicle through which money enters politics, or is, are they just one of many ways that money influences politics?
Yeah, I would say it's one of many. So I think especially right now with the election, a lot of people are talking about campaign finance. I know my texts are blowing up asking for donations. And then you hear about super PACs and corporate PACs and the, you know, whether or not, you know, people who are going to fundraisers have influence. And I would say that is a thing that can get you a foot in the door, but it doesn't get you to the point of actually changing what the content of policies and laws look like. In order for that to happen, you need to hire lobbyists. And that's where lobbying expenditures come in. These groups, you know, they spend millions of dollars a year hiring people who are very well paid to physically be in Washington, D.C., to be, you know, taking meetings with policymakers, but also to be doing a lot of legal research, economic research, technical research to back up what they're saying, right? They can't just go to a policymaker and say, this is good for my company, it'll make us money, so you should do it. They have to go and say, you know, this is what you care about as a policymaker. I hear you. I care about that too. Our company agrees with you. And this is how I think, you know, as a company, you can achieve that. And what they're saying is, of course, good for the bottom line of their company. So it has to be backed up by that sort of, you know, technical and legal, like, legitimacy.
Yeah. In a very layperson frame, the way that I have described lobbyists are the best communicators on the planet, backed up by basically outcome determined research that they may be doing themselves because they want to advance a position that is beneficial to their company, interest group, trade, industry, etc. Is lobbying bad? Like, is all lobbying bad, or is there good lobbying? How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, no, lobbying is not bad. And it's a constitutionally protected right. You know, the First Amendment says we have the right to free assembly, and that includes expressing our views, whether you're a person or a regular person or a business person, or a corporate, you know, you're sitting on the corporate boards of directors for a company, you have that constitutional right. And so I don't think we should necessarily see lobbying as something that needs to be eliminated or cracked down on. But I do think the balance of lobbying right now is pretty skewed, and the resources that people have for lobbying are pretty skewed in one direction, and that's definitely towards businesses. You know, like I said, there are a lot of organizations that do lobbying that are have a lot of interests, right? Professional associations, labor unions, social movement organizations, groups that advocate for public interests, they're all doing lobbying too. But, you know, their spending and their, you know, their workforce is a drop in the bucket compared to what corporate lobbyists are doing. And I don't have, you know, recent data, but there are political scientists who have been tracking lobbying spending. And back in 2012, for every $1 that labor unions spent on lobbying, businesses spent at least $56.
I'm sorry, that was 56 to one?
Yes. And that's what we can track, right? So there's a lot of money that is not being reported. And we can assume that that number has not only gotten a lot bigger in the last 10 years, but is also just not you know, is not the whole universe of what they're spending money on.
And I'll just, because I hear a lot of this pseudo false equivalency between, frankly, organizations that lobby on behalf of working Americans in the middle class and unions and other corporate spending. But the reality is that on a scale basis, they're simply not even in the same league. And this is my opinion. Not Wendy's, everybody that's listening, you folks out there. But since 2012, which is the most recent stats that Wendy's citing, again, corporate lobbying dollars, 56 to every one union dollar. My opinion is that likely since 2012, because of the weakening of unions through various legislation across the country, it is highly likely that those numbers have become even more skewed in favor of large corporate interests and away from organized labor, simply because there is less organized labor than there was in 2012. Wendy, is lobbying regulated? And if so, how? And is that the right regulation? Is it enough regulation?
Yeah, it is regulated. There is a law called the Lobbying Disclosure Act that basically defines what a lobbyist is and who has to report their lobbying activity. There are a lot of problems with this law. There's a lot of loopholes. For one, it mostly focuses on Congress. And so there's a term in this law called covered official. And the definition of a covered official is basically anyone who works in Congress. So a member who's elected, but also their staff. And then also senior level political appointees in the executive branch. But what that doesn't cover are the hundreds of thousands of federal agency employees who are not appointed. You know, these are people who are sitting in these agencies for decades, right? They're career civil servants, and they're writing the regulations specifically that we, as you know, society live under. And so when lobbyists are talking to these people who are holding the pens, they don't have to report that. And there's also a rule in this law that you don't have to report if you do less than 20% of your work as lobbying. And so a lot of people will say, oh, I'm not lobbying. I'm doing policy research, or I'm doing general public education. And there's very little enforcement and, you know, auditing in terms of like going into someone's calendar and saying, okay, are you actually doing 20%? There was a study by another political sociologist who found that about half of the lobbyists who register are not reporting, or there's about twice as much actual revolving door lobbying happening than
reported. Yeah.
So, yeah, as part of this law, you also have to report if you previously worked in government. And a lot of people aren't doing that either.
Folks, that is Wendy Lee. She is a sociologist and fellow at SNF Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins University. She writes and studies about public policymakers, the revolving door, lobbying, all this good stuff. We're going to have to take care of a little bit of business here. But what is the revolving door, very briefly, Wendy? Because that's what I want to talk to you more about after these very quick messages. But what's the revolving door?
Yeah, so it's basically when people move between government and lobbying throughout their career.
Ah, yes, the old from government into the private sector and lobbying, and then back into government potentially, and then back once again, hence the revolving door. Now that we know what it is, Wendy, everybody talks about it like this is a really bad thing. We'll explore whether or not the revolving door is itself the problem, or whether it's the influence that can get wielded in the private sector as a lobbyist because of our porous campaign finance laws and porous regulation of lobbying itself. All of that and more coming up next with sociologist Wendy Lee on today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
It's quiz time. Here's your first question. Which senator joined the extreme left in Washington, D.C. to send COVID relief checks to prisoners, including the Boston Marathon bomber? Answer, Tammy Baldwin. Who backed puberty blockers and sex change surgeries for minor children in Wisconsin? Once again, Tammy Baldwin. Next question. Which senator even supported castration and mastectomies for minors? Time's up. It does sound crazy, but that was Tammy Baldwin again. Over and over, Baldwin has sided with the extreme left in D.C. Baldwin is for they, them, not you. And now for our final answer. It's time to replace Tammy Baldwin. Senate Leadership Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. www.senateleadershipfund.org.
There's something about a plate of warm cookies that sends you back in time. Relive your childhood memories with this year's We Energies cookiebook. Pick up your copy and start creating new memories. Go to weenergies.com to find a distribution event near you. Thank you for making us a part of your family traditions. From all of us at We Energies, we offer you warm wishes for a bright holiday season. This message was paid for by the stockholders of WEC Energy Group.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My special guest this half hour is Wendy Lee, a sociologist and fellow at the SNF Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins University. We're talking about lobbyists and the revolving door. Cardi, I'm going to ask you to make sure that my face is up on the Facebook. Thank you so much. Got my new producer, new part of the Maggie Dawn team. There we are. Love to see you, Wendy, and to see all you folks watching on Civic Media's YouTube channel. Wendy, we left off talking about the revolving door. Is it the revolving door itself that is the problem, or is it the regulatory structure around dark money, soft money, and lobbying?
Yeah, so I would say for the most part, the revolving door itself is not a problem. Just think about your career or, you know, people's careers that you care about. You want people to be able to move around, right? That is a sign of a healthy labor market. It's a sign of a healthy career. And I don't think we should necessarily be telling people you can or can't work in a certain place, right? But I do think the problem is that because corporations have so much money, have so many resources, they're able to hire more former government staffers than, you know, an organization that is relying on public money or nonprofits, you know, would be able to have, right? And so we have to think about sort of the bigger distribution of where lobbyists, revolving door lobbyists are going and coming from. And that's where the problem starts to happen. You start getting into these cycles of, you know, if one person leaves the government office, their colleagues might say, oh, that person is making a lot more money now. Mm-hmm. Also, they were able to do it. I should talk to them and figure out how, you know, maybe they can help me get a job in the private sector. And so it becomes kind of like this cascading effect as well.
Yeah, I think of one example that I think many of our listeners, many of you folks out there may have heard about. That was back during the escalation of the opioid crisis. There was an absolutely critical regulator at the FDA and in some of the, that also worked in some of the other regulatory enforcement agencies. And literally the lobby bought him. He left the regulatory environment, left the federal government, made millions of dollars, and then testified against better regulatory enforcement of opioid manufacturers and distributors. It is the most clear example of this sort of perversion. When we think about this, and we think about what we should be asking our elected officials and greater disclosure, whatever it is, what are some of the top reforms that come to mind when you discuss this with people and based on your own research, Wendy?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people are saying we need to crack down on the revolving door. And there have been a few proposals for that. I feel like every election cycle, someone brings it up. Obama tried to put in revolving door regulations. Biden tried to put in revolving door regulations. I don't think Trump even cared about it. But what happens is they start realizing that it's almost impossible to, you know, first of all, tell people not to take a certain job, but then also, you know, figure out who to hire when you're putting limitations on, you know, where people have worked and what, you know, what companies they've represented. You know, for example, there are a lot of hiring bans. So, you know, people will say, okay, we're going to put a ban on hiring people who were registered lobbyists, or they'll instate a cooling off period. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who are leaving government aren't allowed to lobby on anything they've worked on for the past 1 or 2 years, depending on, you know, what people are saying the cooling off period is. And I think that those are common sense, but what actually happens, because, you know, lobbying is not really well regulated, is that it only just drives demand for revolving door lobbyists who can sort of find other informal ways of lobbying that don't have to, you know, sort of meet the definition of what a registered lobbyist does. So in some ways, I think if we start kind of cracking down on that, it might actually create these perverse incentives to, you know, hire more revolving door lobbyists. There's another way of thinking about this too, which is, okay, so if the revolving door right now is skewed towards business, then maybe what that means is we need to balance it out by hiring from, you know, other kinds of organizations, right? And I think you do see this happening. There's some recognition that we need to diversify the federal workforce. The Biden administration, I think, you know, famously appointed Lina Khan as the
head of the FTC,
whereas, you know, I think the traditional background for someone in that position is typically someone who's had much more close ties with business. Maybe they've represented businesses at a law firm, or have even lobbied on their behalf. And so, you know, there is that recognition that, oh, we can also hire from people who have worked in labor unions or have worked as organizers or have worked in academia or other places that aren't necessarily so close to business. And that's also one way of thinking about how to sort of diversify the networks that people have, you know, the people who are sitting in these government positions.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because I worked in government. I've worked in the private sector. I now do media. I'm sort of, you know, the Venn diagram of this stuff, isn't it? Yep, I'm overlapping in a bunch of them. I knew that when I could feel it when I got into government, and I was a low level governmental employee for the vast majority of my career. But when I got into government, I thought, wow, I've got a really interesting perspective. I bring this diverse experience because I worked at the top level of my profession in the private sector. It was incredibly valuable. So this isn't this like it's either good or bad. It's trying to figure out how to make sure that the diversity of viewpoints and arguments, and frankly, research and technical thinking about ideas is being brought forth to elected officials and those within the executive branch of government that are responsible for drafting and implementing and enforcing our regulatory environment as well. Is that an oversimplification, or is this really about sort of a D, all of the above kind of approach, Mia?
No, I mean, Wendy, I think you put it perfectly. I might actually take what you said and slap it onto one of my abstracts.
Call me later, fellow Badger. We can talk about it.
Yeah, maybe I'll cite you. But no, I mean, I think you're right. You know, it is about sort of creating the right balance in the right ecosystem. A lot of my research is specifically focused on trade negotiators. And I collected all this data about where they've worked after they left government. And for the most part, when you look at this network, right, like I have all these really complex graphs, they're only really hearing their former colleagues.
I got to jump in. I'm so sorry, Wendy. That's Wendy Lee, sociologist, my guest on this episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. Will you come back after the election? We can do a whole show on this, Wendy. I'd love it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely.
She's coming back. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Thank you for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires on this Civic Media station. The Patriotic Millionaires are financial supporters through paid advertising on some Civic Media stations.
The wet spring this year, it got some farmers thinking that they might need to tile their fields finally after a few years of drought. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and with me is Troy Alsmo with the Kartechner Brothers, and he's here to explain what the demand is looking like for tiling this year.
The demand was a little bit higher this year for sure. You know, a lot of guys kind of forgot about how wet spring can be. We've had a couple drier springs in the past, and then with having a really wet spring this year, kind of reminded some guys on how important tiling was, and definitely had a lot more interest throughout the summer, you know, looking at drowned out spots and guys, you know, looking into making the investment with tile this year.
Alsmo said that if you'd like to get tiling done, it might take a couple weeks for them to get out to the field and get it done, but they do feel they are prepared for this fall tiling season. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at those closing markets right after this.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
The Wisconsin Agribusiness Classic is Wisconsin's premier agribusiness industry event, drawing interest and participation from all segments of the industry throughout the Midwestern states. Mark January 13th and 14th down on your calendar to be at the Kalahari Resort and Convention Center in Wisconsin Dells. The depth of coverage and exhibits provided during the conference makes it clear why the Wisconsin Agribusiness Classic is Wisconsin's premier industry event. For more information or to register, visit wiagribusiness.org.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and remember to follow along with us on all things agriculture by downloading our app, The Farm. You can find it on thefarmwi.com or by looking on your app store. Now let's take a look at those closing markets from Chicago. The markets are looking a bit scary here on this Halloween as December corn contracts are down 3/4 at 410 and 3/4, while November soybeans are up 6 at 982.5. December wheat closed out down 2.75 at 570.5, while July wheat closed down 4.5 at 607. Class 3 milk contracts for November are down 16 cents at 2011 a hundredweight, while Class 3 milk contracts for December are down 20 cents at 1947 a hundredweight. Cheese isn't looking much better as barrels finished up down 6.5 at 186, and 40-pound blocks are down 5 at 184. Butter finished out the day up 0.25 at 270.75. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Snow possibly mixed with rain this afternoon, and it could be heavy at times. Don't be shocked if you hear some thunder, and those winds are whipping, gusting up to 30 miles per hour, crashing our temperatures, and snow accumulations could be around 1 to 3 inches. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. The Heartland Trophy is up for grabs in Iowa City. Our coverage begins at 4:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on your local Civic Media radio station, 1260 AM, WLAK.
We visited Alexandria, Minnesota a few summers ago. Great time, lakes, fishing, all that. But this year, for the holidays, we wanted a winter vacation that was just as memorable, just as family-friendly, but with lights and snow, and this time, with our grandkids in tow. This holiday, it's Alexandria again. We're coming back to make new memories.
Explore your holiday getaway options at explorealex.com.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome from Bob's Burgers and Parks and Rec actress Jenny Slate. Then Chicago-based film critic Mariah Gates joins the show to talk noir. All this and the popcorn pick of the week.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Welcome back, y'all. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Thursday, and so I got one of my most favorite women in politics, if not my most favorite woman in politics, Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for the 8th Congressional District. She is a busy lady these very few days out from the election. Welcome back, Dr. Kristen. How are you doing?
So good. Honestly, Maggie, I am having a blast.
I love it. You always bring the high energy. I think that's so important. There's so much going on. I loved your tweet earlier today. First of all, what's your handle on the twit on the X so people can follow you in the run-up to the election?
Kristen for W-I. It's KristinForWi.
So check her out. Share with everybody, because the tweet was really important, and I appreciated the conversation that you were having with one of your constituents.
Yeah, well, I've had a couple big tweets lately, but the conversation that I had yesterday was in just north of Green Bay in Suamico. Incidentally, across the street from where some of our Democrat yard signs had been grossly vandalized.
Oh my goodness.
People spray painting Trump and obscenities and Hitler and just terrible things. Well, you know, of course, all the Republican signs within viewing distance were all totally intact. And I'm having a conversation with a woman at the doors who thinks she's independent. And we bonded over being boy moms. She had 3 boys. I have 4. So I thought, this is good. You know, we've got a connection here. And I said, so what is your issue? What is the thing that you're thinking about with this election season? And she said, well, you know, it's abortion. And she's looking at my literature. She knows I'm an OBGYN doctor. It clearly says that I feel that people should have the right to make their own decisions. And I said, what are you thinking about abortion? And she said, well, it's not a federal issue. I mean, it belongs in the states. And I said, you know where I think it belongs? I think it belongs with each one of us as individuals. You know, you've had 3 kids. You've got a whole bunch of grandkids. If anybody understands that pregnancy can be hard, not joyful, often very complicated, you understand that. Yeah, you're right. We all need to be able to make our own decisions. We all need that freedom. And it was amazing to see how quickly she flipped on that. And it was clear to me she had just been repeating a mantra that had been taught to her about it being in the states. And she hadn't really thought about what that meant. And that gives me hope, because if we can just have these conversations about the things that we actually care about, I truly don't believe we are as divided as we think we are. But it's that division and that fear that keeps us from having these conversations. And when we can't have the conversations, we can't solve the problems.
Yeah, it's those moments are really inspiring, because again, when we strip back the talking points around stuff and you get down to the brass tacks, the vast majority of Wisconsinites agree on the key issues: money out of politics, right? Healthcare more affordable, childcare more affordable, pro newborn tax credit, pro earned income tax credit, pro child tax credit, like all of these, support our family owned farms, support making these decisions within families. And yet it's gotten so perverted. I've got some sound from Green Bay yesterday, the former MAGA president addressing the Green Bay audience there. There's 2 bits of sound I'd like to share with you, Dr. Kristen. The first is Donald Trump addressing women. And it was curious, to say the very least. And since you're running in that very district, I would love to get your sense of this language. Cardi, give me a thumbs up when you're ready to roll with it. Because it stood to me in sharp contrast with the messaging that I've and the values that I've heard expressed by you and Vice President Harris, which is I trust women. I trust women and their doctors to make these kinds of decisions. And if we don't have that right away, guys, why don't we take a listen to Donald Trump addressing the Green Bay audience? Because it seems that he's got a bit of a penchant for insulting the very audiences he's listening or he's talking to. Let's take a quick listen.
Again, I want to thank Brett for being here. And
turn it up.
Giving me that really incredible tribute of an endorsement. I'm not going to ask him to come up. He made such a good speech. I watched it. Brett made such a good speech. I don't know if he could do that again. Brett, you did so good. I'd let you do it again, but I think you hit it perfectly. What do you think? We love you, Brett. Thank you. We love this guy. Man. He's something. Oh, that arm. Boom, boom. What a player. What a great guy. I think he's beyond as a person. I think he might even beyond what he was as a player, but that's pretty hard to do. Thank you very much, Brett. Great honor to your family. Thank you. We're also joined by Brett's incredible wife, Deanna. And, oh, and that son is so good. He's a great soccer player.
He's a grandson.
Taylor, thank you very much. Look at him. He's a little shy.
Guys, I was actually looking for the sound where he insults Green Bay, but let me just summarize what he said. He kept going on and on like this for a while, and at the end, he says, "I've been here 4 or 5 times. Not sure why I bothered coming back. Maybe because of Brett. I'm not sure why I'm wasting my time with you, all of you people here. Who does this? It's so strange, Kristen.
He does this. He does this all the time. The rambling with the insults and the weirdness, and then people start leaving, and then he gets into a garbage truck. I mean, it's after almost
missing the door handle a couple of times. Yikes.
Yeah, and like, you know, having some sort of weird walking thing, and it's got to be sensational. And he is so good. If there is one thing Donald Trump is genius at, it's creating that moment that makes people watch and then buy something. And often it's something that is truly junk. But he, for some reason, can get people to do that. But, you know, when you start actually talking to people about it, they understand it, but they don't necessarily recognize why they support it.
Yeah.
And when you can strip away all of that stuff and you come back to the issues, you know, like you said earlier, Maggie, we're aligned on all of these issues. I would also add to the very long list that you shared, clean air and clean water.
Yes. Thank you. Forgot that huge one.
Well, it's huge in my district because up in Marinette, we're the third largest contaminated PFAS site. And you know what's happening down in Madison? They're sitting on all that money for PFAS relief. So, like, we need a government that works on the state level. We need a government that works on the federal level. We need a president who actually talks about the issues that we care about that are affecting us, not about in a garbage truck or how big Brett Favre's sausage fingers are. Nobody cares about that stuff.
It's just so, why? All right, we have the sound about women. Let's take a listen.
And my people told me about 4 weeks ago, I was saying, no, I want to protect the people. I want to protect the women of our country. I want to protect the women. Sir, please don't say that. Why? They said, we think it's very inappropriate for you to say. So why? I'm president. I want to protect the women of our country. They said. They said, sir, I just think it's inappropriate for you to say. Pay these guys a lot of money. Can you believe it? I said, well, I'm going to do it whether the women like it or not. I'm going to protect them.
Or not.
Like, not, Donald. You are not protecting us.
We don't need your protection. We need your respect. Can I just leave it right there?
Yes, you can. I don't need your protection, Donald. I need your respect. And that begins with full citizenship rights, right? I mean,
yeah.
It has really been an incredible week. I want you to have the opportunity, Dr. Lyerly, to address your voters. You have, I think, really passionately communicated to people why you are pro-choice, why you're running. But there may be a couple of folks out there listening now that haven't heard you tell your story about why you've got a busy medical practice. You got kids, you got a husband, why do you want to be in Congress?
Hey, I have the most amazing life. I have wonderful children. I love my job, but I can't do my job. And I wouldn't say that I'm pro-choice. I would say that I'm pro-patient. Mm. I dream of a time when I can welcome a patient into my office and hear what they have to say, hear what their problem is, talk through all of the options and come up with a solution, and then treat them and continue to follow them afterwards. That relationship, that therapeutic relationship, is so important. You know, medical care isn't like getting your car maintenance. It's not like getting your oil changed. There is a whole thing that goes along with it. You need to know that your doctor, your healthcare provider cares about you. And when your doctor and your healthcare provider knows you, you get better care. So that is my dream, and that is what has propelled me to run for office. My patients, not just the women, but the families get care. The families. It's a reproductive health issue, but it is a health care issue. I work in rural areas. I work in places where people need cars to come and pick them up to get them to their doctor's appointments because they don't have a vehicle. They don't have gas. They can't afford basic medications. There are so many barriers, even if they do have insurance, to being able to get the drugs and the treatments that they need. We've got to make health care accessible and affordable for every single American. Ultimately, I want to be part of that solution. That's why I'm doing this.
Yeah, it's in stark contrast to your opponent, who seems to have happened upon a desire to enter public service during his year-long vacation, which is just strange. Did you want to make a comment, Doctor?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as the congressional seat opened up, public service became his number one priority. It had never been a priority for him before. Yeah, and you know, this is the guy who, when asked on a different civic media station show about his fundraising numbers, because his fundraising is abysmal, he said, well, you know, it's hard for me because I've never had to ask anybody for help before. Well, except for that PPP loan that you took out during COVID and then didn't pay back. That's help. That's over $300,000.
Oh my goodness.
You know, like, be honest with yourself. Be honest with the people around you.
Well,
and
who
not
says
what we've
that?
Seen.
Like, I don't want somebody in Congress who's never had to ask for help before. That's your job in Congress, to help people.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a question. I've got Officer DC Metro Police Officer Danny Hodges joining me tomorrow on the show. You have met Danny. He's spoken at one of your rallies. I wanted you to give you the opportunity to address January 6th. And these issues very briefly.
Yeah, well, my opponent held a big rally at a mega church the other night. And during that rally, a January 6th participant said that they were very disappointed with how Mike Gallagher handled the January 6th situation. And they asked if he would do things differently. And he essentially said that the folks who were there, who are imprisoned, they need to be freed. So we this morning issued a joint press release with Danny Hodges, Officer Hodges, and former Officer Harry Dunn, talking about how this is law and order. Yeah. It is applied across the board. Nobody knows this better than you, Maggie. It has to be applied across the board to every single citizen. Nobody gets a free pass here. So just knowing that my opponent feels this way, and that out of one side of his mouth, he says he supports law enforcement, and out of the other side, he wants to release these people who literally killed officers on January 6th. I mean, Danny Hodges was almost crushed. His eyeball was almost gouged by one of the insurrectionists. So, no.
And your opponent wants to pardon the people that did that to Officer Hodges serving the public. Folks, that's Dr. Kristen Lyerly, candidate for the 8th Congressional District. Don't go anywhere. I'm so excited. My interview with Sarah Jessica Parker is up next. A feminist and a fearless advocate both Dr. Lyerly and SJP. Bet you thought you'd never hear those together, folks, but you did so here. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you, Dr. Kristen. Go get them.
Thank you, my friend.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
I'm George Gale. I'm a longtime community organizer and lifelong Midwesterner. In this season of To See Each Other, we're heading to one of my favorite places, Wisconsin, to get to know a group of small town folks fighting for community and dignity for the elderly and a better future for us all. Join me in Merrill, population 9,000, where a beloved public nursing home is unexpectedly up for sale.
I was in tears. I talked to the social worker. What am I going to do?
I don't want to live under the bridge in a pasteboard box.
It's a heart-pounding roller coaster of a fight in a swing state that could determine the election. This is To See Each Other, where we explore how people are fighting for the future of rural America and how writing it off hurts us all. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Wisconsin has many state symbols, but did you know there's an official ballad?
Oh, Wisconsin, land of my dreams.
Oh, Wisconsin, land of my dreams, composed by Sherry Sarazin.
I don't think it was an hour, and I had the music matched up.
With long ago help from her grandmother.
She wrote a poem in the late 1920s about where she lived in Wisconsin.
And it's now the state ballad. So are these also official Wisconsin symbols? The Kringle, Wood Violet, American Water Spaniel? The answer coming up. The official process can take years and includes advocating the legislature to make it law. Now, along with the official ballad, are the Kringle, Wood Violet, and American Water Spaniel also state symbols? Yes, each is a celebration of the state and a slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This lady needs absolutely no introduction, but I'll give her a little bit of one anyways. She's, of course, a star of film, screen, and stage, a fashion icon. She is the incredible Sarah Jessica Parker. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks so much for making time, SJ.
Oh, thanks, Maggie. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Real thrilled to have you. You know, as we think about both the way that Hollywood and the political arena have framed women for such a long time. women are framed often in relation to men, right? Through a male lens, through the male gaze. And we seem to be returning to a bit of that frame in this election. And so, like, you have fought against that frame and to make women and their characters on screen and stage and in film the center of their narratives, themselves, their relationships. I think Kamala Harris is also trying to break through that frame. How is she doing that? Is this inspiring to you? How important is this moment for women, not just in politics, but across all industries as we really try to turn the page?
Oh, that's such a great and smart question. And I'll try to be brief in response. I will say that I'm a parent of two 15-year-old daughters. And as concerned as I've been about this election, and as we can all agree, the stakes are so high, to be witness to my 15-year-old daughters who lamented last night to me, in their words, how disappointed they are that they can't vote, speaks to the sort of inspiration and I think excitement and energy and enthusiasm the vice president has brought in this brief 100 plus days to this election. And I think more importantly, the idea that there is so much at stake for women and that she has harnessed the urgency and the seriousness of what is potentially to be lost has been hugely inspiring, but it's also been motivating. And so as she tries to, and I think has done beautifully, keeping the focus on optimism and hope and opportunity for all people, it's impossible to ignore the role that she can potentially play in all women's lives. And for me, the headline is reproductive freedom. I mean, it's incredibly simple. I don't think it's controversial to say in this country, to have lived with access to the healthcare needs of women, to have that be taken away is monumental. And her intention, and she says it time and time again, she's been a fierce champion on the issue of reproductive freedom. I think that this is a moment for women that is not just thrilling, but I think is will shift the plates of the earth in this campaign. And I think we're starting to see it. I'm knocking on my wood floor right now. But I think she's reframing the way the role that women are playing in politics, and I think will be across all industries. We keep talking about her being the first woman and how historical that is. But she's also deeply qualified, deeply qualified. And I don't want to forget that and have this the historical part eclipse that this is a uniquely qualified person who really wants to be a president for all people. And I think she's articulated it beautifully. And I think last night, Trump did the work for us. He said, "I will protect you women, whether you want it or not." And that to me is a narrative that I personally don't want to live by, and my daughters don't want to live by. And I think we have to return to the freedoms that this, you know, that we've become not only accustomed to, but that are our rights.
Yes, that we deserve full Correct. Participatory equity in all areas of our lives. Let me just close with this question, SJ, and thanks again for making time. You know, you have been a long-term, very vocal supporter of women's empowerment. You've been outspoken, but anytime you engage in this sort of advocacy, there is risk. Why are you so strongly supporting Vice President Harris now? Do you think more people should do the same from other kinds of industries that have a platform similar to yours?
We can go long for a second because this is really important. I'm a citizen. I was raised... I wasn't raised with money. I relate very much to the story that the vice president has been sharing about her life. I believe and know that what she wants is to help people, to help family, to lower costs, to give people the opportunity to have homes, to create a life that allows their children to grow, to have rich existence, to have the possibility to achieve their dreams. And that sounds like the home in which I grew up. That's what my mother wanted for me with very, very little to make it happen. She was industrious and she took full advantage of every opportunity. And that meant we were students in our public schools. That's when public schools were supported. And those are all the things that are incredibly important to the vice president and I think affect all of us. And I just want to say, as a mother, as a woman, you know, the women of Wisconsin have an opportunity to turn the page along with the vice president. You all lived under an abortion ban from the 1800s until about a year ago. Trump and Vance have every intention to create an abortion ban in all 50 states. This is no time to sit on the sidelines. We have to protect each other. We have to protect and speak out for the people who don't feel that they have a voice. And we all have to make a plan to vote. So help neighbors who have a harder time getting there. Talk to your colleagues, your cousins, your friends, your coworkers, your classmates. This election is, in my estimation, the most important in my life. And I am incredibly excited about the role that women will play in it.
Fashion and entertainment icon Sarah Jessica Parker, from her articulate lips to each of your ears, get out and vote. Take your friends, families, and colleagues. Make a plan to vote. It matters. Thank you so much, SJ. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. This will do it for this episode of The Maggie Dawn Show. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. La 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 la
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we'll be live from Fox City Stadium, the home of the Timber Rattlers, a Tracy Olson of the Lincoln Project, your calls and more. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Matt Nair on air.
This shouldn't be a thing.
Woman pleads guilty to trying to smuggle 29 turtles across a lake in Vermont into Canada by kayak so they could eventually be sold in Hong Kong.
So they could vote illegally in November.
Stop box turtles from voting. She's facing 10 years in prison.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.